Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 118, recorded on February 15th, 2011. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad, App Store, iTunes, Apple TV sometimes. I'm Michael Johnston. Here with me is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
Yeah,
We just did this. Oh, you have a little bit of a cold?
Just a bit.
Just a touch.
It's kicking my butt.
Well, you can hardly tell.
We'll survive.
Yeah.
We got stuff to talk about.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet's here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff.
Hey. Sorry you're not feeling well, Adam.
Yeah, it happens. Somehow I avoided it at Macworld, and then, you know, weeks later. So this isn't the Macworld bug, I don't think. It's something completely different.
But you don't think it, like, laid dormant, and then the Macworld plague then just struck?
Exactly. I don't know. I don't think so. I think it's separate.
Yeah, I think it's
been going around when I've been talking to people. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Well, so according to, let's see, John Gruber speculates that we will be seeing the iPad 3 in September. And in addition to that, TechCrunch believes that they say that they have independently heard that Apple will be revising the iPad this fall. And according to Gruber, the reason for this is to line up the iPad release schedule with new iPods.
That doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense to me either, because it makes sense that there are, right now, the product release cycle that they have going means that Apple is grabbing headlines every few months.
And they have a new product, a new big product rollout every quarter.
Right.
So the problem that they had years ago, where they would have this post-Christmas, pre-school buying season lull, where they'd go several months with real low income, those days are gone. That they have the iPad in the spring, they have the iPhone in the summer, they have the iPod in the fall, and then, of course, that doesn't even include the Mac lineup.
Right.
So, yeah. So moving the iPad to the iPod schedule doesn't make sense to me.
You know what? I'm almost with you. The one thing that I can kind of buy about this is, if I were Apple, I'd want to be releasing new iPads now in the fall and move the iPods to the spring, because iPods have kind of sloughed off in terms of sales, right? Apple's not, they're not having year-over-year growth. And I think with back to school, the iPad seems like the ultimate, like, hey, you're going back to school. You're going to get your textbooks on ebooks, and you're going to take all your course notes on this thing. And, you know, it's like the ultimate tool for that.
Is
thing.
It really,
so,
though? Do you really think that the iPad
if I was in college right now, I'd totally, the iPad would be the thing I'd be lugging around with me all day, because your battery lasts all day.
True.
You have your schedule on there. It would just do everything. And especially like a new version, if there's a camera, you could be recording lectures, taking notes. There's a bunch of cool apps for that that'll even, you know, let you go back and review and match up with the audio, your notes and things like that.
Here's the big issue with the iPad and having it be a great schoolmate is typing on it, actually taking notes and stuff. And yeah, you can get pretty decent with it, but it's just typing on a touchscreen gets arduous.
Yeah, but even an iPad with like the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, that I'd prefer over a notebook.
I agree.
So you're carrying two things.
The MacBook Air, the MacBook Air, then it would be better than that. But if you can't afford a MacBook Air, you know, it's a good alternative. But the point is I think that Apple would sell more iPads at back to school time than they would iPods. So if they're working on doing some sort of switching of those schedules, just swapping the two, it might make sense. And especially because I would assume they don't really need to rev the, you know, the iPods this spring per se. Or fall, excuse me. I'm getting my dates mixed up. They could move that to the spring and it probably wouldn't affect them too much. So that was the only thing. As Gruber was making that argument, I'm like, oh, that kind of makes sense. And two, you know, there's that whole delay on new screens, which I really am believing. I don't think the iPad 2 is going to have a new screen. I think there's production problems and ramp ups that need to happen with supplies. I think Apple has a new screen planned. So it would give them the opportunity to kind of do a revised model with a better screen at one point. It does kind of screw everything up, though. So that's in the back of my mind. I'm with you guys on that. It's like, does Apple want to do that? There has to be good justification for it. And the only thing I could come up with, again, using my filter of Apple's bottom line, is I think they could sell a crud load of new iPads right at back to school time.
So yeah, I could see that. And but if they rev the iPad in spring, really, what's to stop them from selling a buttload of iPads at back to school time anyhow?
Yeah,
true.
I mean, I totally get the argument that you're presenting, and it completely makes sense. But I wonder if Apple's really going to go that route.
Yeah, and plus it screws up my upgrade, because I was going to buy the iPad 2, and now I'm like, what am I going to do? Do I buy the iPad 2 or do I wait?
Oh, come on, you're buying the iPad 2.
Okay, so then the assumption is that Apple is going to do two major revisions of the iPad this year, which they could.
I don't think there are major revisions, though. I think the iPad 2 is just going to be a minor bump. You know, I don't think there's going to be. You're going to have the camera.
You're going to have the camera. Better battery life. Probably a faster processor.
More RAM.
Maybe more RAM. I don't know, though.
If it doesn't have more RAM, I'm not buying it.
Wait, Apple, how much does it have now?
256.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'm sorry. I was thinking.
I was thinking storage, too, and that's dumb because I know better than that. Storage is different than RAM, everybody.
It's
just
cool.
For the record.
Sorry. Yes. I misinterpreted that the same way you did, and I agree. It will have 512 instead of 256 for RAM.
Yeah. At least, man, I would like to see a gig.
Yeah, I'd like to see a gig too, but I think it's going to have pretty much a lot very similar specs in terms of that stuff to the iPhone 4.
Yeah, except for the camera part.
Well, and only a forward facing camera. I'm still not buying the rear facing camera. It makes no sense to me on an iPad.
You know, I got a tangent.
I'm with you on that.
My friend Bill has an iPhone 4, and he's one of those guys who just loves to. Pick on anything Apple. So if there's anything that ever goes wrong with a piece of Apple hardware or software or anything, you know, he throws it in your face.
Because he's that guy. All have that guy in our lives.
Yeah, but he has an iPhone 4 because his, you know, crappy other cell phone broke eventually, and, you know, he decided to get an iPhone 4 because it's pretty much the best phone you can get.
It is.
And, I mean, it does have problems. I'm going to be the first one to talk all about the problems and headaches I have with my iPhone. But he's encountered something that's very strange with photos. And I think this is something that's been an issue for a long time, maybe. But I've just not noticed it. But he told me today most of his photos have a blue splotch in the middle, and then out from that, it gets yellowed, and at the edges, it's purplish. And he was describing this.
You got to tell him to stop shooting his photos with Hipstamatic. to use the built-in photo app.
Yeah,
it'll be fun.
Well, you know, he told me this, and I'm like, okay, maybe he's exaggerating. Maybe he's, you know, looking at it very closely and letting his eyes adjust and that kind of thing. But no, I actually took a look at some of these photos, and there's an incredibly noticeable blue splotch in the center of these that you...
It's one of two things. It's either a defect in the lens or a defective camera sensor.
It seems like it's a defect in the lens, and here's the interesting thing about it. These photos that have that, if you look at them on the iPhone, there's no visible issue. As soon as you import it to a computer, it's right there.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm going to check my photos now.
Yeah.
I take a lot of iPhone photos.
So you guys haven't really heard about this? Because he's been talking with like geniuses and stuff like that all day, trying to figure out.
This one's new to me.
Okay. Well,
is it a Verizon iPhone? Maybe it's a new feature. maybe they're seeing how popular Hipstamatic and Insta, what's the other one that everybody uses?
Instagram.
Yeah. Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah. Apple's going, oh man, those things are popular. We better tweak our camera sensor just to do those effects naturally.
Yeah. Add the hipster effect. But yeah. Okay. So if you guys haven't heard of this,
built-in hipster effects. Yeah. Yeah. It's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. If you haven't heard of this yet, then I guess we'll wait and see. I haven't been able to reproduce it on my phone. He's also had issues with actually importing photos on his phone, although he has 3,000 photos on his iPhone right now. That he's taken.
Oh my God.
He takes lots and lots of photos. And,
good luck getting those to import.
Why do you say that? Is there a bug?
There's a bug where.
Encountered that.
Yeah.
What's the bug?
The bug is if you have more than, I think the breaking point is around 300 photos that you've captured, you have issues importing into iPhoto. Like it just chokes and simply does not work right.
Same deal with image capture too.
Yeah, well, it's using the same engine.
Okay, yeah. So what's the do you know what the solution is?
Well, the fast solution is delete all your images.
He wants them though.
But you can select a subset of images, import them, and delete them. And just keep doing that until...
Do like 100 at a time or something like that?
Yeah.
Or like 300, 200 at a time or something?
I would do less just to be safe, but...
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, he's... man, he's just gotten a lot of fuel to badmouth his phone lately.
Okay, but why are you leaving that many photos on your phone?
Because, okay, here's the issue. It's a recursive... It's like a catch-22 thing for him. Is he does ridiculous stuff and has ridiculous habits with his iPhone. And so he encounters ridiculous problems and calls them out as, you know, horrible defects with Apple products.
Not like any other device.
Things I've never encountered in my life.
Right?
What's that?
Not like any other devices that would suffer from similar issues.
Well, I mean, that is kind of a weird issue.
Software reaching limits with numbers of items? No, that's historically something that happens all the time.
Fair enough.
Remember the layer bug in Photoshop where it could only do like 99 layers?
No.
Right.
Like annoying as heck.
He should probably know about that when he does a lot of ridiculous things with Photoshop too.
Right. I mean, I never personally reached that limit, but when I heard about it, you go, yeah, that's ridiculous, but it's not uncommon, you know?
Sure.
Programmers, you know, don't think about stuff. You know, they're testing and they're going, oh, we got, you know, we never thought of putting 500 photos on the thing and seeing if it would sync.
Yeah, 3,000 photos, mostly of textures.
Oh, okay. Well, just delete them then. I was assuming he was like taking pictures of his boyfriend, if you know, whatever.
It's not all. I mean, most of the stuff he wants to keep. The reason he's trying to import them is because he actually wants to keep them.
Yeah.
Does he have an iPad?
He should. I mean, he's correct. I mean, it's a bug that Apple needs to fix.
It's a stupid bug, and it shouldn't be there. I think that the limit isn't because the operating system simply can't handle the numbers. I think it's just a coding bug that puts an artificial ceiling.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But
yeah,
now, so another option is if you have an iPad, import your photos or a chunk of them into your iPad. And now you've got them split between two devices, and now you can import from both.
Yeah, I think I'm going to... He said that it's like 17 minutes or something he has to... 17 minutes worth of import time, and then it'll totally poop.
Sure.
So he then...
I've been there. I've...
Here we go. I'm just going to blame it on USB 2, because USB 2 sucks.
Okay,
you know... I'm going to get on that soapbox with you. I mean, really, who thought, really, seriously thought that USB 2 would be a totally fine sustained data transfer interface? That is That is a total crock. It is not. And
why is that? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
Okay,
you fill us in. Yeah.
All right. So if you look at USB and the way it handles data going through its pipeline, it's designed so that you can get those little bursts of data that need to happen through the pipeline efficiently. So that's mouse movements, your keyboard strokes, things like that.
Yep.
When it comes to sustained data throughputs, it doesn't do that. So connecting a hard drive or an iPod or an iPhone is not going to give you very good performance because it can burst up to that theoretical maximum data throughput, and then it drops way back down really, really slow, and then it'll burst back up again. If it went sustained data throughput that's reliable, then you're moving to FireWire or SATA, something like that.
Yeah, it was a problem. I mean, USB was, you got to remember, USB was designed for peripherals.
Right.
Right. Yeah. It was supposed to be printers and mice and keyboards. And that was kind of it.
iPhone's a peripheral. Kind of. It's also another computer.
Well, that's why the original iPod was FireWire and it was awesome.
Right.
And my Apple older FireWire iPods syncing with iTunes, it's just like, poof,
I would
done.
Love to sync my iPhone over FireWire. That'd be sweet.
You know, Apple even made a big deal out of the fact that it used FireWire to transfer files, so that you wouldn't have to wait forever.
Yeah, yeah. Go check out that keynote, the 2001 iPod keynote. They go into great depth.
Yeah, but the industry decided that, you know, USB was going to be the way to go. And it sucks, too, because I know all these people that now want to do video stuff, right? And all the new HD video cameras use HD. Well, guess what? You can't do the cool camera control stuff, and you can't do live shoots, and you can't stream right into your Mac with those. On the audio side, you can't have, you know, everybody goes, oh, I want to have multiple USB microphones. Well, guess what? Nope, can't do that.
No. Yeah. All right.
That's
well,
not how it works. All right. So I'm going to
blame
off topic
USB.
For just a second.
We're off topic. You're going to go off topic?
Yeah. Off topic.
Okay. So we just mentioned the old FireWire iPods. So I have one of the, what is it, the third generation ones where it was the solid state click wheel and the four buttons across the top.
Oh, yeah, and I have that one. Third gen.
Yeah, so it's an awesome iPod, but the battery's dead in it. Yeah. So who do you guys like for replacement batteries?
OWC.
OWC? All
right. Does Tech Restore still do that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, OWC, it'll send you the kit, and you can do it yourself. It's really easy.
All right, I'll just... older. You know, it's... I don't use this iPod that much, but it's really nice, and there are times when I really want to use it for specific things, so want to put new battery in it.
And they'll do the replacement for you if you want. They did the service for me as kind of like a review thing, mm-hmm. and it was great. I mean, I just sent it in. They sent it back with a new battery on my my fifth gen iPod. I actually have an older iPod video, 40 gig. What's funny is both of these iPods are the same size as my like iPhone. In the case of the older video, it's bigger.
Yeah, it's okay. $18 for one of those batteries on newer tech.
Okay,
you're talking about the third gen iPod, the one with the row of four buttons across the top.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I might do that for mine,
too. So we're talking a $20 part.
Yeah, $17.99 OWC.
Right. Yeah, and I think it's a bigger battery, too. I think you get more juice. And
yeah, they get the new power. That's what they call it. High capacity battery.
All right, well, then I'm just going to have to order one.
And they send you the little toolkit for opening it, and they have great instruction videos. And
yeah.
Easy.
That'll be fun. So Apple has officially announced... At least they've announced the App Store subscriptions. So the thing that we were waiting for, we've been waiting for this, the thing that was rolled out with the daily or the idea that it would be in the daily as soon as we get iOS 4.3 is the ability to subscribe to content within applications just as we do with in-app purchases. So this would be a recurring subscription that is currently not in iOS, but it is supposed to be available in iOS 4.3. And of course, Apple announced it as them providing weekly, monthly, bi-monthly, quarterly, bi-yearly, or yearly subscriptions. And that functionality will be available to developers. They didn't actually say in iOS 4.3. We're all still assuming that, right? That we have to wait for 4.3, which is also why The Daily has announced that they're extending their free trial.
Now, oh, really?
See, Daily is extending their free trial through the 28th. My assumption is they're extending it not because they want to give us more time to try it out, but because they have no choice.
Right, because it won't work until we get iOS 4.3.
Now, I didn't know if it was going to be iOS 4.3, although that seems reasonable. Until today, I was assuming it was because Apple still hadn't fixed everything they need to fix so that the subscription service actually worked. It might be some of both.
Yeah, so in addition to this announcement, Apple has also officially addressed the ability for app publishers to allow people to get access to purchase content within the application that was purchased at an external site or location, such as the Amazon Kindle store. You buy your books on the page and then, you know, say send to your iPad, or you do it in Mobile Safari on your iPad and then jump back to the application. There's no actual storefront within the app. And now Apple is officially stating that for applications that offer purchased content, that purchased content must be available in addition to external sources. If you want to continue doing external distribution, you have to include internal in-app subscription style purchasing within the application, which of course means that Apple would be getting 30% of that cut. And all applications that want to do this, want to have in-app purchases or external app purchases, have to be in compliance by June 30th.
Right. Now, if you do, or if developers decide that they're going to go along with that, the only time they have to give Apple a cut is if a customer makes the purchase in-app. If they go to the website, Apple doesn't get a cut.
Right. I think it's interesting that they're giving this, giving developers until June 30th, it seems like that's just enough time for developers to come up with some clever ways to encourage people to purchase apps at their website and not within the application.
You mean subscriptions?
Well, either. In-app purchases and subscriptions. You know, with the Amazon Kindle store, you're going to be actually purchasing books.
I see what you're saying, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of stuff. Interesting.
Well, what I'm wondering about in the case of like Amazon, so the deal actually is, if they have a purchase option on their site, they have to have a purchase option in the app.
Yeah, let me read this from.
Or you see what I'm saying? Like, or can you get around it by saying, well, we're just not going to have buy buttons in the app, and the app is just going to be for syncing and reading the books that you buy through Amazon.com.
Well, let me read this.
That's not really clear to me.
I should read this.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that's not clear.
Yeah. I think it was Steve Jobs that said this. Our philosophy is simple. When Apple brings a new subscriber to the app, Apple earns a 30% share. When the publisher brings an existing or new subscriber to the app, the publisher keeps 100% and Apple earns nothing. All we require is that if a publisher is making a subscription offer outside of the app, the same or better offer must be made within the app so that customers can easily subscribe with one click right within the app. We believe that this innovative subscription service, blah, 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 blah. So maybe, is it, Jeff, do you know if it's just for subscriptions or is it for in-app purchases as well? Because this kind of indicates that it's only for subscriptions.
Well, in-app purchases, that's already been sorted out. That's done because that's been available for some time.
Right.
It sounds like this is in-app subscriptions, but the vague part is, well, what about companies that do like Amazon does, where you're making purchases? And so it sounds like this applies to them as well.
But the other big one that's everybody's thrown out there and I want to know about is, you know, Netflix. right?
Oh.
Is that different? Because I signed up for a Netflix plan. I'm obviously not going to sign up for DVDs maybe through the in-app, but my DVD program comes along with a subscription. So is that mean Netflix is required, or is it because Netflix, there has never been a button in the Netflix app to say, go subscribe to Netflix. It's sort of, you are a Netflix subscriber through the website and the app gives you access to that content. So it just seems like a real gray area to me. Is that a quote unquote video subscription? There's a physical component along with it. If Amazon or if the Netflix takes that away, is that changed? So all of these things are way up in the air.
Yeah.
Right. And my assumption is that subscription services like Netflix don't fall into this category that Apple's referring to now. But I'm only assuming. I have absolutely nothing to base that on other than it just seems logical. And we know how logic works out.
I mean, and Steve even kind of muddies it up in that quote, because I think at one point he's talking about, well, if a publisher has, physical subscribers, so if I'm subscribed to, say, Wired, and I am, and I get the physical magazine, I'd like to be able to get the digital version for free. I can, or this might have even been in the press release, they can give that to me for free because I'm already a subscriber, and they keep 100% of my revenue because I subscribed outside of the app. Now, do they have to now offer also the ability for me to subscribe in-app? It sounds like they do, if they want to give their existing subscribers free digital subscriptions. So they might just choose, we're not going to do it at all because we don't want to have to share the revenue.
Yeah. And until Apple makes this much clearer, well, we're kind of up in the air. Now, this might be part of the reason why developers have till, was it the end of June, to get their apps up to speed with the new policies. Because it might be that Apple expects that they're going to have to do some negotiating and finagling to get everything so that it works right for customers, for them, and for the companies that are using the new services.
Yeah. I can see both sides of this equation, because the reality is, as a consumer, if there's going to be magazine subscriptions available inside, via these apps on my iPad, I would actually really prefer just to be able to just easily subscribe in the app in one click and not.
Yeah, definitely.
It.
With the TomTom application, for example, they offer a traffic subscription, and I just assumed that, if I buy a year's worth of TomTom traffic information, it's going to be with my iTunes account. And so it popped down, and like, I'm actually kind of driving as I decide this because I need some traffic information. And of course, it's like, enter your TomTom account. I'm like, it doesn't sound like iTunes, but, I went ahead and I entered my iTunes information. And of course it goes, this is not something that's registered. You actually have to have a TomTom account. And so that was kind of irritating. So
sure, especially because you were driving.
Yeah, definitely because I was driving. Yep. So we have more to talk about, but before we talk about more news, I have to talk about an application that this is not a sponsored thing. This is a review, and I do want to talk about it because it's very cool. It's DJ for iPad, and it was actually it's featured right now in the most current iPad ad. In the very beginning, it shows someone doing some scratching with it, which is something that you can definitely do. Can you hear it? Scratching.
Nice.
Yeah. So it has two turntables, virtual turntables. You
and
select
a microphone.
Sorry.
Well done.
And it allows you to select from your iPod library. So you press the little button on the side of one of the turntables, slides up a list, and you can choose from there. It sets it up. It figures out what the BPM is. It gives you a nice waveform output. And like I said, you can grab the virtual turntable and actually do scratching. It has a crossfade. It has a pitch control for both decks, so you can actually alter the pitch, you know, along with the speed. So I can let me bring it over here. The only thing is, as you can tell, it doesn't have a key lock. So if you actually change the pitch, you're actually changing the pitch as well as the speed. So you can't lock the key. You know what I mean by that,
right?
So it doesn't get all chipmunky.
You can speed up and slow down, but not alter the pitch.
Right.
So that you don't jump out of the key the song.
Right. So you can't do that with this application, but you know, because it would require a lot more CPU usage. But you can do a lot of jumping around with the waveform. You can set up cue points. So you can have it faded over to one track, and then on the other side, if you have a special split adapter, what you can do is hear in your headphones what you have queued up on the other side, on the side that doesn't have the main output. So you can listen to it, find exactly where you want to jump in, set it up, get it ready, and then at the point where you want to mix in that other song, you bring over the crossfader and do your thing. It has EQs for both decks, and it's a very cool interface for that. They're little slide-down things, so you can actually do everything you need to do. You can work with the two decks and change the pitch and all that stuff with these little EQs coming down. You can change the gain, and you can actually at the same time change the levels for both sides. So you can, you know, move the bass down on one deck while you're turning up the bass on the other deck. So you can do some really nice smooth transitions. But I will say that the only time where this app really works as a useful DJ application is if you have the queuing adapter, if you actually have headphones. Otherwise, it's just way too hard to figure out where you want to drop in that next track. But the good news is you're basically just getting, in order to do this, you just get a stereo split adapter. So it splits out the stereo signal from the headphone jack. So, you know, I'm not really sure which one is which, but left, let's say, is your headphones, and then right is going to be the main out. And that's not really a big deal because you're getting both sides output in mono, but on both sides, you know, in ultimately. And it doesn't really matter for like DJing and stuff, assuming you don't really care about that. I would say the biggest issue with this, though, is that I've actually had it crash. So that's the first reason I'm going to say that it's not a good idea for actual performances. Maybe at your house playing around, it'd be cool. And I've also had it randomly jump back to the beginning of tracks while I was using it. So I'm not really sure what the deal is with that, or if I touch something weird. I would say either way, that's kind of a big drawback to this application, that either it's easy enough to jump back to the beginning of a track without realizing it, or that it actually has this bug. So it also looks very good. It works very well, aside from, you know, weird crashiness. I'm, you know, functionally, it's easier to figure out. And it also has this auto mix feature, so you don't even have to attend to it. It'll automatically mix it. And it has a sync feature as well for your beats per minute. So my conclusion on this application, on DJ for iPad, it's $20, I believe. It's very basic. It doesn't have any effects or anything. Like I said, you can use the EQ, and you can set up a cue point, play, crossfade, change pitch, that kind of stuff, and actually record what you're doing. But that's about it. And I've had it crash and did some strange things. If you try to use it without the split output, I'm going to say it's just not useful. So you have to have that monitor. And I think that goes for any application that is a so-called DJ application. You have to be able to hear the other deck while you're playing, because without that, then you don't know where you're starting the next song. So there you go.
All right, so not ready for prime time, but if you want to screw around at home with some friends,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
totally cool for that.
Yeah, it's $20 DJ for iPad. If you're into that, into playing around with it, like I said, I've actually, once I got that split output set up, it's totally usable as a proper DJ application. But you need that split output, and that's not a special adapter that you need to buy from them. You can get it at Radio Shack, just something that splits the two stereo outputs into two mono outputs. But yeah, there you go.
Cool.
So did you hear this rumor? I believe it was from Cult of Mac, says that Apple is finally working on their notification system. According to Cult of Mac, They've actually acquired a company, a small iOS development firm, that currently offers notifications, you know, a special notification system for the iPhone. They haven't said who it is, but the speculation is the guys who do Boxcar. And they're planning to alter the way that, you know, how we get notifications right now. It's either, you know, it's a pop-up every time, and it's either reply or close or okay. And that's just too difficult to deal with. It's very modal, and you know, you have to bounce between applications. It'd be nice to get something nicer like what the Android guys have.
I'm up for better notification system on the iPhone.
Definitely. Adam, are you still with us?
Can't hurt. Yeah, I'm still here. Sorry.
It's cool. Yeah, so that'd
Didn't
be good.
Have anything to add.
Okay, yeah. I mean, we're all on board. So do we want to talk about the smaller iPhone? Did we talk about the stupid smaller iPhone rumor last week? I think we did.
No, we did not. That's a new one.
Okay. So what is it?
Well,
according
maybe we did. Did we? I don't know. Now
I think you ranted a bit about how there's no reason for Apple to make a $200 iPhone or something like that. Okay. So according to the Wall Street Journal, they're saying that Apple is planning to make a smaller iPhone for, or I guess next generation iPhone. So maybe iPhone 5 Nano or something like that. Where it'd be $200 without a contract and free probably with contract. It would be cloud-based, right? So it wouldn't really have a lot of onboard storage. You'd generally stream anything, probably through MobileMe, according to them. And they said that it would have what they say is an edge-to-edge screen with voice navigation. What else did they say?
It would eliminate the storage. There's something about ponies in there, too.
Yeah. Something about things that won't be happening. But, okay. So, I think the most interesting aspect of this rumor, I'm going to say that because that would mean that you'd have differences in the screen size, and it would just be so difficult for developers to make applications. I mean, it wouldn't be so difficult, but it would be difficult. It would mean another version of their applications, and that just creates more of a mess.
Right.
But idea of using MobileMe as your, you know, media storage or media hub or a way to get to the media on your computer at home, I think is a very plausible thing, especially, you know, we see that it has Back to My Mac and it actually works now, at least for me. And taking that idea one step forward and allowing you to do, you know, like Back to My iTunes or something like that would be fantastic. And I feel like we've really been working up to this for a long time. And it'll be interesting to see what Apple ultimately does, whether it's streaming from your home computer or if it's streaming from a central iTunes server. I'm guessing they're going to be doing the former.
Okay, so I'm thinking that the smaller iPhone to go for more market share, I'm kind of leery on that because Apple continues to make the previous generation iPhone that can be sold for a lot less. AT&T is selling the 3GS for, $50? So if you want your $50 phone, you can get a full-featured phone, full-size phone, and that's it. It's, you have all the features of a 3GS. I'm wondering if this new phone size, edge-to-edge screen and all that is possibly a misinterpretation of the information that's available, and maybe Apple has figured out a way that they can make the iPhone 5 so it's thinner all the way around, and that they actually can go edge to edge on the display and give us a full-featured, full-size iPhone that just happens to be thinner and a tiny bit narrower.
Yeah.
The thing about streaming all of your content to the device, I'm betting if we went and asked AT&T and Verizon what they thought of that, they wouldn't be pleased at all.
That was going to be my thing, is are they going to give us all back unlimited data?
Oh, I love my unlimited data. I'm so happy I have unlimited data. I don't know if I mentioned this enough, but I just love the ability to just stream anything I want.
You know, I'm having that dilemma, and I'm sure a lot of the, you know, our listeners probably have this same thing, because it came up again this week, is how much data do I really use, and how much do I need, and how much do I want to have to keep paying for the privilege to be able to do just that, to stream whatever I want, because they won't, you know, they won't let you go back. So I've only held on to it because I don't want to lose it. But I went and looked at my data for the last 6 months, and only one of the last 6 months did I go over the 200 megabyte limit.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly. And I think some of it's due. I went back further over the year, and like over the summer, I had a couple months where I used like a gig. So wow. I think what's happened is, though, I've been using my iPad more and more for data, and more with my iPad, I'm going to places that have open Wi-Fi. So it's one of those catch-22 things. It's like, do I want to keep giving AT&T $30 a month, or should I really be only giving them $15 a month? Yeah. And now that I have this new hotspot,
yeah,
the
LG,
you know, it's sort of like those few times when I do need to stream something, why not just use that? And you know, I could almost completely drop my data plans completely.
Right.
If I really thought about it, if I really wanted to push it. But I'm seriously considering, you know, dropping my iPhone plan, looking at my usage, down to the $15 a month, 200 megabytes of data.
Wow.
Because that's really mostly what I'm using.
You know, I dropped the unlimited plan because I wasn't even getting close to 2 gigs of usage a month.
Right.
I go over 200 megabytes a month often enough that the 2 gig plan makes sense to me. But if I had the Android mobile hotspot phone thing that you talked about last week, then going down to the 200 megabyte a month plan would totally make sense. Because then you have enough data that if for some reason you don't have your mobile hotspot available, whatever, you can still get online and do the stuff you need and right. not have to worry about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's becoming a dilemma. And it's, you know, something when we really think about what we're paying, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm going, you know, I'm paying a lot for stuff I'm not using, and AT&T is just profiting. You know, and
which is okay. They need to build out their infrastructure. They need to support users like me. So you're kind of helping offset all the ridiculous downloading
that
exactly. I do.
Yeah. So you're welcome.
Thank you.
But no, I mean, I more and more, I think we need to start looking at our data. But the flip side of this is that I'm still angry that the game has now become, let's limit data more, instead of let's compete and open it up because people want to use more data. So what we're seeing is us as consumers, we want more and more data. We want more and more access to data when and where we want to get it. And we're seeing more and more cloud services, and we're hearing about things like, yeah, iTunes should be in the cloud. I should be able to stream everything I want anytime, anywhere. The problem is that the carriers and the providers aren't going to make that possible. So those are two drastically conflicting things. And I don't know who's going to resolve it, you know. And I'm not to get political, but I think I put on my Facebook, you know, Obama had this thing about getting Wi-Fi to rural, you know, some funding to get Wi-Fi to rural areas. And I think that's great. You know, everybody should have access. But if the carriers are going to be in control of it, and this was what I said in my post, is like, if it's still going to be AT&T and Verizon and the carriers, you know, controlling the pricing on that bandwidth ultimately, you know, they're going to buy the spectrum from the government, but they're going to be in control of it. They're going to limit it and restrict it so nobody can afford it or use it the way they want to use it, which is just stupid. Sorry. I knew I was going to get ranty at one point with this cold. I'm just angry.
Now, see, I kept my mouth shut because I could tell you're on a good rant and I didn't want to break your stride.
But I think you guys know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah,
it's ridiculous that we don't have... Yeah. Have good bandwidth in this country. I had a listener. Here we go again. I had a listener who from the Netherlands, and he literally pinged me on Skype because his girlfriend was at a conference in Florida, and she was at the hotel, and the Wi-Fi was $10 a day. He's like, isn't it free? Shouldn't it? Here it's just free. I mean, it's like having water in your room. Like, we don't even think about it. And I said, yeah, well, no. This is the U.S. Welcome to the U.S. We've got the worst, you know, broadband wireless coverage, you know, in the world. We rank really bad when it comes to that stuff. I said, so, you know, more and more hotels are offering free Wi-Fi as part of your room, but it's not standard for sure. And he was just like, he couldn't believe it. I said, yeah. I said, go to Starbucks. They have free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, finally.
She's like, well, she can't really leave the hotel. It's like, yeah, well, then she's going to have to pay the $10 or $15 ransom for. And I said, and then make sure you tell her to be prepared that if she can get 1 megabit per second down, she's going to be doing really well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With how badly they set up that stuff in the hotels, you know? So it's just,
you know,
like,
considering I can set up a screaming fast network in my office for under $200, let's say. We'll be generous. Let's call it $200. You'd think that a hotel could get a network set up for their guests that actually lets them get at data faster than a dial-up modem.
But we've all experienced it, right? And he was just in shock. And I'm pretty sure the Netherlands has really good like broadband and coverage and stuff like that compared to the U.S. So
I would assume
it was just
so
interesting that it was just like, it was shocking. I'm like, no, we deal with that every day. That's the norm here.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I don't complain about our bandwidth in the United States as much as I used to after spending about a month in Italy where it was amazing just how deplorable the availability of broadband was, and then trying to find a place where you could get on a network. I mean, it was horrible. And you think hotels here are backwards with the way they handle internet access for customers. In Italy, it was ridiculous. And I mean, Italy's an awesome place, but man, someone needs to help that country out with their internet.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, even if they don't do the cloud streaming thing to kind of bring it back, you know, my thing is still at some point they need to get iTunes tied in with some sort of locker or ability to store and just re-download all the purchase content that I'm getting from iTunes. Because I'm gathering all that stuff and it's sort of like, and subscriptions is another great example of this, is, you know, I'm pretty sure I have the Wired app and I'm pretty sure I bought an issue when it first came out, and I just went back to the app today because I was thinking about subscriptions and I was looking at the different magazine apps that I had, and it wasn't in there. And there was no option to re-download it, you know, aside from rebuying the issue again. And I'm like, that's crap. You know, and the same should go with all my iTunes music and my movies and stuff like that. I should not, Apple has copies of that on their servers. I shouldn't have to worry about backing that up. I think people should back that up. I'm not saying that we shouldn't, but I should also have the ability to just say, just like apps, You know, I think Apple did a great job with the apps. I can re-download an app without having to rebuy it. They have that record. I should be able to do the same thing with all of my media, my iBooks, my whatever it is I buy through Apple, especially now that they're getting that cut. You know, we should be able to do that.
You know, I have a feeling, and I'm not trying to be Apple's Defender fanboy here, but I have a feeling that the reason we can't re-download music that we buy at the iTunes store has more to do with record labels than it has to do with Apple's ability to keep track of what we've bought.
Yeah, you're probably right. I don't care whose fault it is. They just need to fix it.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
But yeah, I'm willing to put the blame on those guys.
Well, okay, so I just fired up the Wired app because I hadn't launched it in a while, and the issue that I bought is gone, and the only way to get it back is to buy it again.
Cool.
Yeah, that's what happened to me too. So
that's bullshit.
I have to send an email to them. Hopefully they'll resolve that as a customer service thing. We'll see.
Do you know who I am?
I'll report back.
That's what you say. You say, do you know who I am?
I'm not gonna do that, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, what they say. The problem there too is, I think, for consumers, and this is actually bringing it back to the subscription thing, this is going to be a problem for consumers because in terms of the privacy in your data, it's very clear, and Apple has said it needs to be very clear that once you've signed up for the subscription, you're under the privacy policies of the publisher. But what happens when it comes to support? So my issue didn't download, or, you know, who do I go to? Do I go to Condé Nast, Wired, or do I go to Apple and the App Store people that I bought, through their in-app purchase? Who's responsible for that support?
That's a really good question.
And now, I know what happens is that they point the fingers at each other. Ask any app developer. You know, when you have a problem with a purchase, Apple will say, "Well, go to the developer," and the developer's like, "Yeah." You know, it's Apple's system that screwed up or whatever. There's a lot of finger pointing back and forth, and that's just another issue that Apple's going to have to get resolved if they're going to force publishers and developers to use their payment system. They're going to have to at least do a better job of handling returns and customer support related to download issues and re-downloads and things like that.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to something that's really bogus. How about that?
We haven't talked about enough bogus things yet?
No, the iBooks issue. So, for those of you who use Jailbreak, and in fact, it's fun that my pick last week was the Green Poison Jailbreak. So if you happen to jailbreak your iPad or iPhone and read purchased books from the iBook store, you are no longer able to get access to your content. And
limited. Okay. It's limited to DRM. Copy protected content.
Correct. So anything that you purchase legally through the iBook store, you're now not allowed to read. So here's what happens.
Well, that's because you're a naughty, naughty boy and you jailbroke.
I know. But so
you
so
just want a spanking. I know. I'm certain that's you're doing this just because you want.
Just because I like to be punished.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm going along with this. We need to get off that. But so here's what happens. You jailbreak with Green Poison. Happy day. You can do a whole bunch of fun stuff on your iPhone or your iPad. But so you go to tap on one of those purchase books that you have, it will pop up a message saying, "There's a problem with the configuration of your iPhone or iPad. Please restore with iTunes and reinstall iBooks." And the way that this is being detected, it's explicitly a jailbreak detection, because the way that they detect it is if, you know, by jailbreaking, you enable the ability to run unsigned code on your iOS device. That is code that has not been officially signed by Apple. And the way they detect this is they have some unsigned code in the iBooks application, which they try to run. And if it does successfully run, then they know that you have a jailbroken iPhone and they disable the ability to read DRM'd books that you've purchased.
Okay, now just to make sure, based on, because I haven't had a chance to read up a lot on this yet, is this a case where what Apple needs to do to make sure that people aren't pirating content, so that publishers don't breathe down their neck, that they're just going through a regular check thing to make sure that you're not running a hacked version of iBooks that bypasses DRM, or is this actually a thing where it looks like Apple intentionally went in and did something just to detect jailbreaks and to piss off jailbreakers?
Yeah, I'm going to call, I think this is a lot of the jailbreak community making a lot out of something that I don't think is what, if Apple wanted to screw with jailbreakers, they wouldn't choose this method. This is lame.
I agree.
Apple's better than that. They wouldn't go, oh, we're going to make them, not be able to access their iBooks. That's going to really get them.
But the thing is, it's only DRM'd books. So books that you have pirated from torrents or free books, you can read no problem.
Right. So that's why I think what Jeff is alluding to is probably more likely the case, that the publishers are going, jailbreakers can get past our DRM potentially if you don't do something about it. And Apple went, okay, well, we'll put a message in there and force them. I don't know what happened. I think it's not even that. I think this is something that I find it hard to believe that it was deliberately put in there just to go after jailbreakers. I think it's something that just got triggered by jailbreak, and it's just one of the consequences of jailbreaking. But
so you think that this
I'm
is
totally
something
wrong.
To keep, let's say hypothetically, and I'm not sure this actually exists, it might, because I'm not really into stealing applications and stuff like that on my iPhone.
Right.
But so you think it might be a case where they don't want a modified version of iBooks to be able to open up DRM'd content, because that DRM'd content would likely have come from a source that is not your
I'm
iTunes
assuming
account?
With via a jailbreak, you could end run around. I'm pretty sure you can end run around, because the DRM that's on iBooks, I'm assuming, is exactly the same as the DRM that's on apps.
Yeah,
and we already know that if you jailbreak, you can get around at the DRM and that's on apps. So I would assume you could also get around the DRM that's in the iBooks.
Sure.
Yeah. Now, this could just be a thing where the application looks at books that appear to have DRM in them and verifies in some way that the DRM hasn't been tampered with. And as a side effect of jailbreaking, it makes it appear as if content has been tampered with, so, even when it hasn't.
So what this is trying to protect against is people distributing DRM'd copies of iBooks.
Yeah, like around, cracked copies
Yeah,
well, exactly. If it was cracked, then it wouldn't have DRM on it, right? So then this message wouldn't be triggered.
Yeah, but it might still have fingerprints in it to indicate, hey, this was supposed to have copy protection.
That's just one theory. My point is that if Apple really wanted to hose jailbreakers, they'd do something to the phone that would make you force you to restore it, right? Yeah. This doesn't really force you to restore your phone. It's kind of inconvenient.
Right. Yeah,
see, I think you hit it right there, Adam. If Apple really wanted to do something to convince people, maybe jailbreaking isn't the best way to go. Stopping you from reading copy-protected books isn't the way to go about that.
I mean, they could do something a lot more. And I think Dave Hamilton mentioned that Skype, if you launch the Skype app on a jailbroken iPhone, it does a similar kind of thing. It doesn't do anything to change Skype, but he said he seen a message that said something like, this is not designed for I forget what the message said, but basically it detected, said you probably shouldn't be running this on this device, but go ahead,
right,
kind of thing.
Right.
Do you have
right.
Skype? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen that message.
So, they're detecting it too. So it's obviously something that's easy to do. So whether Apple's programmers put it in there on purpose or, and with the timing of subscriptions too, again, back to the publisher thing, could it be something related to subscriptions where it's more of a generic message that, or it says it specifically call out iBooks.
It calls out iBooks. It says reinstall iBooks.
So, I mean, maybe they did, but man, I mean, it seems like they could do a lot more to stop jailbreaking if they really wanted to. And I saw an article today too, because the new developers terms of service came out with the updates for subscriptions. And there's one section in there that I think, I forget which site was referencing it. It might have been Unofficial Apple Weblog or Cult of Mac or something like that. But there's a specific section that's been in there for a while where Apple even says, you know, it says that you can't make an app that will autonomously control vehicles, basically cars or trains or planes or anything like that, right? And
I'm out. I'm getting an Android phone.
Well, tongue-in-cheek as that is, the Apple says in that line something to the effect of, so if you want to control your robot army to take over the world, then you're probably going to need to jailbreak. I mean, they like say it in their thing, you know, in their own official documentation. So I don't think Apple's really all that concerned about jailbreaking, I guess is what it comes down to.
Yeah.
I think they don't care about it that much.
The happy ending to this story is that a solution has already been found. The new version of the Pwnage tool, the official iPhone dev team tool for jailbreaking, for making cracked install packages, software update packages, does already have the fix in there. So if you need to read your books immediately on your jailbroken iPhone, you're going to have to restore using a Pwnage tooled
is that a IPSW. Jailbreak?
Untethered.
Cool.
Yeah, the new version of Pwnage tool has iOS 4.2.1 untethered jailbreak, which includes the fix for iBooks, as well as something. Yeah, there's a Wi-Fi problem on the Apple TV 2G as well that's fixed in there. So that fix will be available in Cydia soon. And so if you're experiencing that, which I have confirmed, I'm experiencing that. Fortunately, the books I've been reading lately have been cracked from the Amazon Kindle store. And by that, I mean I purchased a book on the Amazon Kindle store because it wasn't available on iBooks, and then I cracked it so I could read it in iBooks.
Which is some content that you legitimately purchased. You just moved it from one application.
Format shifted it. Yeah. This is what we do when we back up DVDs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same thing.
And I have no problem at all with format shifting.
Yeah.
For personal use.
Yep. All right. We will move on to our iDevice picks. But before we do that, we have a question from David. And that question is, or David writes, I'm thinking about finally getting an iPhone now that it's on Verizon. I've been using an iPod Touch since the first generation, and I have an iPad as well. I've always done the jailbreak stuff, as I like being able to tinker and do the extra customizations. One thing I want to figure out before I consider jailbreaking the iPhone is all this baseband stuff. I have never had to worry about that with the iPod Touch. I guess the baseband is just the version of the modem software that communicates with the carrier. How does all that affect jailbreak stuff? I have seen on some jailbreaking guides about preserving baseband or downgrading baseband, but I've never really paid attention. What does it all mean, and does it matter? Okay.
Good question.
Yeah, it is a good question. So the baseband stuff, as you thought it does, it refers to the actual cellular communication portion of the software. So the baseband is software on the cellular modem in your phone. And the reason you want to preserve or not upgrade your baseband. So what happens with when they're talking about preserving your baseband version or, you know, when you update is, such, you know, with Pwnage tool, for example, there are unlocks available for certain older versions of the iPhone baseband. Newer versions have the exploits fixed. And so the way they get around that is you create a custom iPhone software update package, which updates the iOS version. So all the software and the firmware, but it doesn't upgrade the modem software. So that way you get your update, you get all your, you know, new software fanciness. You can jailbreak that and you keep your unlock. And so the only reason you would have to worry about baseband updating is if you're jailbreaking or unlocking. You can jailbreak all you want without worrying about baseband. I don't worry about the baseband. Generally, what I do, you know, you can actually restore completely with the stock Apple firmware, you know, right now to 4.2.1 on your iPhone 4, as long as you're not planning to unlock, because it will update your baseband software. And then you can jailbreak with Green Poison, no problem, except for the iBooks issue right now. But yeah, so the baseband stuff is only if you need to worry about unlocking, which if you're using Verizon, I doubt you will.
And some people might not know the difference between unlock and jailbreak. I think that confuses a lot of people.
Yeah.
And oh, good point.
People need to know that those are two separate things. And unlock, the only reason for unlock is that gives you the ability to use different SIMs or use different carriers. Some people want to do it for the, you know, world. They're going to different parts of the world or something like that. But do you know, Michael, what the current state of unlock is? Unlock seems to be a lot more dicey than jailbreak in terms of, one, totally hosing your phone, and then two, you know, if you get it wrong, and then two, the different versions of the iPhone 3, 3GS, 4 have unlocks or don't have unlocks available to them. And I don't even know, is there even a current unlock for the iPhone 4?
Yes, there is. But the caveat is that you have to, I think, anything past 4.1, you cannot unlock. And that goes for the iPhone 4 as well as the 3GS.
Yeah, so that's when you have to get into, like, rolling back your baseband.
You can't do that. You cannot roll back your baseband. It's a one-way thing, except with older versions of the 3GS. There's a specific version of the 3GS with a special older bootloader or something like that.
That's like when the 3GS first came out.
Right. Yeah, you can actually roll back the baseband on those, also on the 3G, and I think on the original iPhone, but on newer versions of the 3GS, especially with the ones that are still available now, you can't roll back. So you want to either keep the baseband that you have on 4.1. Well, I mean, you if you want to unlock, you have to keep the baseband that's on 4.1. You can't upgrade the baseband. But what you can do is, again, preserve the baseband version by using the Pwnage tool to create a custom version that only updates the software.
Yeah. See, like, if you live in the world like I do, where you think jailbreaking is a bag of hurt, I don't even know what you'd call
unlocking.
Unlocking. That's like suicide.
Yeah,
I wouldn't even mess with it. I mean, unless you have a really, really specific need, it doesn't seem like that's something you ever need to mess with.
My mom's on T-Mobile on her iPhone.
Yeah, but that's because you're just crazy enough to handle the whole jailbreak and unlock thing for her.
Yeah. She also has a 3G.
For mere so mortals.
Yeah, if you're going to travel internationally or something like that, just get a burner phone, or, you know, what need when you're over there. You know, a pay-as-you-go kind of thing. I mean, I know people who do it because they want to travel with their iPhone. That's a problem that needs to be addressed from a consumer standpoint. You know, I'd just be screaming at Apple and those guys and say, look, you guys got to figure this out. And there are those rumors that Apple's going to put out a world phone at some point here. You know, I think we're getting close to it. But until then, I would just say, you know, find the internet cafes when you're traveling, find the Wi-Fi hotspots, and get a cheap pay-as-you-go phone. Don't mess with the baseband thing. I don't know. I just hate hearing people have screwed up their phone and now they have a brick.
Yeah. Well, if you get a brick, then you can just tell them, I was updating my phone and I don't know what happened. And just play dumb. That's the best strategy. But yeah, I hope that answers your question, David. And if you want to get in contact with us to ask a question, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. So, iDevice picks. Adam, you want to go first?
Yay! Yeah, you know what? I'm going to pick something. I haven't had a chance to play with it too much. I've been trying out a lot of different drawing applications on the iPad. And one that just recently got updated and I've loved on the Mac is ArtRage. You guys know ArtRage?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a great drawing program on the map on the Mac. Has great support for the Wacom, Wacom tablets, however you want to call them. Whack-a-mole. They have a version now for the iPad. I guess they've had it for a while, but this latest version I decided to finally download and try out, and I really like it. One of the things that is always a dilemma when I'm playing with these for me is they're either too simple or they're too advanced. And what I mean by that is I have like SketchBook Pro, which is probably my other favorite one. The thing about that is I never really know when I'm using the different pens and tools and things like that. There's all the settings you can go in and kind of tweak around with, and I can never quite find the exact setting that I want. So with ArtRage, you kind of have this little palette, and it has physical representations of the different types of implements. So you have like a pencil. And so you can pick the pencil, and you can go in and you can fine-tune and tweak all the settings, like the size and the hardness and all of those elements. But there's also kind of like this little presets folder, and you can make your own presets, but it has some auto ones built in. So for the pencil, for example, it'll have like a hard and dark pencil or a soft tipped pencil. And so it kind of gives you some default effects that you can start with and play around with and then hone in from there. But I'm finding that the defaults are really working for me just for doing drawing and sketching and stuff like that. So it's something that I've been wanting to kind of get into more, and I'm starting to play around with it more. And I think this is going to become quickly my new favorite app for doing this. And you've got paint and paint palettes, and you can mix the colors, and there's airbrushes, and it does have the features of layers, which is important, the ability to sample things. And just like ArtRage on the desktop, you can put in reference images, bring those in and pin them to your artboard if you're drawing from a photo reference or something like that. And then you can also have layers with opacity and all those other controls that you get in all these advanced programs, drawing programs on the iPad. But what is really kind of put it over the top for me is this little preset feature. And I'm sure some of the other applications have this, but this is the first one where it's been really obvious to me how to access it and how to set those things up and stuff like that. So I think it's $6.99, $7.
Yep, $6.99.
And ArtRage 3 for the iPad.
Cool.
Guess I better check that out.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yep. So Jeff, what is your iDevice pick this week?
My iDevice pick is actually something that I believe I picked a long time ago or Adam picked a long time ago, but it's totally worth bringing up again because of some recent updates, and that's GoodReader for the iPad. It was updated, just in the last couple days.
Yep, a couple days ago.
It added in SugarSync support, and it also added in the ability to download folders filled with documents instead of just individual documents. And it added the ability to tag folders and files to be pushed out as an auto-sync every time you check for synced items. So you could have a folder that you and several other people need to share for work or whatever, and everyone needs to have all the same documents all the time. Whoever puts documents in there, when everyone else syncs their GoodReader app, it will automatically push all the content out to them. So just for those reasons alone, totally worth bringing back up and mentioning again, because it's such a useful application. And there's some other updates in it too that apply to its original intended function, which was a PDF reader.
Hey Jeff, can I ask you about that? Because I haven't tried this out. I just read about it, and I did grab the update. Mm-hmm. So does this kind of end up working like a pseudo? Because I know it works with Dropbox. You know, I have my GoodReader integrated with Dropbox. So is it sort of like Dropbox in that effect? So where I have a Dropbox, and anytime a file gets changed or updated in that Dropbox, it all automatically syncs back down to my Mac. In this case, that update's going to actually sync back down into GoodReader or push back out. Because you're mentioning push. I thought it was a sync down. So I'm maybe a little confused on how the feature works.
I haven't had a chance to play with it enough yet to see if it's fully automated. From my understanding, it is not fully automated, and you actually just have to initiate a sync check yourself. But then all of the different services that you're using, you know, Dropbox, MobileMe, Box.net, SugarSync, I think there's a couple others.
Right.
It will check all of them at the same time, and any changes that need to be pushed out to you at that point, they will happen automatically.
That's so cool.
So it's not like 100% automatic. You launch the application and all of a sudden there's new files magically there. Although it may do that, and I might be completely wrong. I haven't seen that happen yet for me.
That's cool. I'm going to have to play with that. I'm looking forward to it. I'm thinking it kind of works like almost like a manual Dropbox. And if that's the case, you know, where I don't mind having to actually say, yeah, sync my files, but it's kind of cool that it can automatically go out and grab a whole folder. So if I can define specific folders, my one fear was that I was going to have to be my whole Dropbox. And I hope that's not the case, but we'll have to see.
No, it doesn't have to be your whole Dropbox. And the price, this application is so horrendously underpriced. It's like, I think, $3. And it should be like $10 at least for the usefulness that you get out of it. It needs to be a lot more than it is.
So I guess it's my turn.
It's your turn.
Yep.
All right. So my pick this week is Alien Blue for iPad. And for those who don't know what it is, it's a Reddit reader. And it's just one of the best ways to check out Reddit. So you have you're able to sign in, get all your stuff so you can vote up down on anything on Reddit. You can see all the comments by just tapping. You can see it all threaded. You can see a list of articles off to the side. Tap on one, bring up the full page on the right. You can do mobilizer options. There's, for stuff that's just an image, there are nice options for viewing just images in various ways. You know, turning it in one rotation actually saves you the, so one of the cool things that I like to do, so if I'm browsing like an image subreddit, you can have, you know, if you're holding your iPad in landscape, you have this list of stuff on the left, and then you have the main content on the right. But when you turn in portrait mode, it'll save whether or not you have the stuff on the left, the list on the left. So generally, if I do the portrait mode, I don't want the stuff on the left. So that automatically goes away. And when I turn it back, there's my list. It's very handy. Like I said, you can have all of your subscriptions from, you know, your Reddit profile on the left, all the subscribe things. You can also have casual subreddits. You don't have to actually subscribe to some things. You can just have a little list of things that you occasionally check out. You can manage your subscriptions as well. You can manually go to a subreddit, and of course you can look up a user. There are a lot of other things in Alien Blue. But if you're a Reddit user and you have an iPad, you just got to get it. Alien Blue for iPad, it's $3.99. It's awesome. Has tons of different features. Has passcode lock if you want. You can check out your messages. It has tilt scrolling. It has different two different appearances. It has a night theme, so it's black and white, or it has a really nice gray and blue kind of standard iPad look and feel to it. You can change the text size. I think everybody on Reddit agrees that if you have an iPad and you're on Reddit, then this is just the one to get. Especially because of this cool image viewer thing, too. It has a one button, and it just pulls all of the image-only posts and allows you to just kind of scroll through them and tap on it, bring it up, check it out, zoom in and out.
That's really cool. Okay, so does that make it easier to look at content in Reddit without eating all your time? Because I've actually stayed away from Reddit simply because of the tales friends have told me about sitting down to look at one thing, and 3 hours later they think, oh, maybe I should get back to work.
So you're asking if this keeps you from spending way too much time on Reddit?
Yes.
I would argue that it does the opposite of that.
I better not buy it then.
It makes Reddit very easy to check out.
Okay, so for people that totally dig the Reddit thing, then an awesome application. For those of us that are afraid of losing time we don't have to lose,
yep,
we should stay away from it.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm already wasting time right now. I'm looking at it.
Hey Jeff, while he was doing that, I tried out this sync thing on Dropbox. Mm-hmm. So I can give a little insight on how it works. So it's really simple. So any of your connected servers, any of the locations that you have set up, basically you go in there, you select a folder, and then down at the bottom of the folder list, there's a little sync button. You tap that, and then that will set up the syncing connection. It'll say, okay, this is a folder that I want to keep in sync in GoodReader. It will suck down everything that's currently in that folder and then set it up for syncing. It puts a little green kind of sync icon on that folder. And then next to web downloads, there's now a new sync button. So the next time you launch the application, if you want to sync those folders, you just tap the little sync button and it will resync everything you've set up for syncing. And then it also looks like it adds a new remote sync section where you could do individual folders that you've set up as kind of sync folders with the different locations. So it doesn't matter what location it's in, you can kind of sync everything from all the different sync folders that you've set up.
Okay, so you do have to tap the button, but once you do, it just sucks down everything that needs to be synced.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Kind of kick ass. Yeah.
All right. I think with that, this is like an hour and a half long show.
Sweet.
Awesome. Yeah. So you can send your, you can check out the show notes as well as our iPhone picks. Everything's listed out for every episode at wehavecommunicators.com. Check out the individual episode. Click on the link. You can see all that there. You can see our picks, links to our stuff. Occasionally a drawing from Jeff. You can actually comment on the show each individual episode and interact with other listeners there. Of course, you can send us email feedback@wehavecommunicators.com if you have a question or a comment or something like that. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com and twitter.com/jgamet, as well as his Zazzle store, zazzle.com/jgamet. And you can also find the official We Have Communicators coffee mug or beer stein, right? You have a stein there?
Yeah, you can do a stein. You can do a travel mug. There's like a big kind of frosted clear mug, a couple different sizes of coffee mugs. And from personal experience, anything you drink from these mugs tastes better.
Yep. True story.
Yep. I'll buy that.
Adam Christensen's at the MattCast, of course, mattcast.com. Twitter.com/MattCast and a member.mattcast.com is where you can find the wonderful premium version of the MattCast.
Yep. Yep. I went into all kinds of detail about my new LG Android iPhone iOS hotspot.
Yeah, that hotspot phone is making waves across
making
the internet.
Buzz. Yeah,
lots of buzz.
It doesn't get shut down. I've probably created a monster in there.
I heard about it on the Mac Geek Gab.
Yeah.
They were talking about it on the Geek Gab, and I think Dave
I've been
actually
telling
purchased
everybody
one too.
About it. Yeah, I'm going to be guilty. So if it gets shut down, you can all blame it on me.
Okay,
right. So what you need to do before it gets shut down is sign up for Adam's Premium Podcast, mm-hmm. so you can get all the information and take advantage of unlimited hotspot availability.
Yeah,
while you still can.
Yep.
Exactly. Exactly. The other thing I want to throw out there, though, you know, if anybody, what's the status, Michael? Maybe I shouldn't throw this out. I'm going to ask you first.
Okay.
What's the status of a WHC logo and website design?
What is the status?
Because every time I go to wehavecommunicators.com, I think I'm on Drupal.com.
Yeah, it's a sad Drupal layout.
Apparently, the We Have a Communicators logo is the Drupal guy.
Is it? Yeah.
Hopefully, we don't get sued for that.
You know, I think they assume that that will happen on some websites. But you're right. There should be something.
So are you working on something, or can we throw it out to a listener who has too much time on their hands if they want to take a stab? Not saying that we will, you know, take any logo or anything like that, but I wouldn't mind if somebody has an idea for a logo and maybe a Drupal website design, theme design. I'd be open to suggestions.
Yeah. Yeah,
or,
yeah, definitely.
Or do you have somebody working on something?
I don't have anybody working on anything on that front.
So
that little blue droplet guy, that's not our logo?
Nope.
Oh. Okay.
Exactly. Yep. So
I guess I'm going to have to throw out all those t-shirts I printed up.
Not a competition or anything, but if anybody has an idea or just wants to throw a logo our way and we think it's cool, maybe we'll use it.
Yeah, feedback at wehavecommunicators.com. Yeah. Yeah. Also, my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston, and I definitely recommend checking out the Lil Reviews Twitter account that I work on, twitter.com/LIL Reviews. That's, you know, little reviews of things, 140 character, bite-sized reviews. I think I mentioned the DJ for iPad review there. Give it a little bite-sized review. All the stuff that cool. I eat, stuff that I drink, movies that I watch, stuff like that. All that good stuff. Twitter.com/littlereviews. And with that, we will see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet.
How are we going to communicate this? The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck. Yuck, yuck,
no. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus, 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 stylus.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them.
Yuck, yuck.
A stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus.